airs from NPR member stations and from the David Geffen Foundation, promoting arts, culture, and civil engagement.
And support comes from WFAE members and dermatology, laser, and vein specialists of the Carolinas, welcoming Dr. Olson and Dr. Kasari to the practice, providing state-of-the-art skincare to the Charlotte region. Details at carolinaskincare.com. This is WFAE.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Even as people go hungry throughout this country and around the world, many of us throw food away. Leftovers get tossed. Produce goes bad. Sometimes things just go stale while they're waiting to be consumed. It's gotten to the point where in America, we toss up to 40% of all edible food. That's about 600 pounds of food per person per year, meaning the average family throws away, wastes, $1,350 worth of food annually. Jonathan Bloom knows this all too well. A journalist and food waste expert, he created the blog Wasted Food and wrote the book American Wasteland, which is now out in paperback. He joins us for the hour to help us make sense of this phenomenon and its consequences. And he's joining us from a studio, I believe, at WUNC in Durham. Is that correct? Okay. Welcome to the program, Mr. Bloom.
Oh, thanks. Good morning.
Sorry, I sounded confused about where you were, but now I've got it straight.
In Durham.
There are people trying to change this behavior at an institutional level, and among them, people within the University of North Carolina system, in fact. Len Lippig is an economics and food studies major at UNC Chapel Hill and the sustainable food blogger for The Motley Fool. How'd you get that gig? That's a good job.
Well, actually, David Gardner, the founder, went to UNC Chapel Hill, and he gave a talk, and then I met him that night on Franklin Street, got his business card, and it was just magic from there.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. And Kathy Boutin-Pasters is a recycling coordinator at UNC Charlotte. I guess if you're going to waste food, recycle it. Is that right? Is that
compost it, yes.
Compost it, which we'll do a lot of talking about. And there are other things that UNC, the system, is doing to prevent food waste.
Exactly,
which
yes.
We'll talk about as well. I called you, Jonathan, a food expert or a food waste expert. When did you become one and why?
Yeah, a strange term there for sure. In the summer of 2005, I had this opportunity to volunteer at a place called DC Central Kitchen, which is a food recovery organization in our nation's capital. And what they do is go out and rescue food that otherwise would be tossed. So they go to supermarkets and restaurants, caterers, et cetera, et cetera. And just seeing the sheer quantity of food, but also the quality of items that they had rescued, that started me asking questions on how much food is wasted in America. And from there, I've just started researching it, and that led to publishing American Wasteland.
I got to tell you that we got the idea to do this topic today from somebody who ultimately could not join us, and that is a young woman who dumpster dives. Literally goes to dumpsters behind grocery stores and pulls food out and consumes it and has never gotten sick. And for some reason, she couldn't join us on this program. How in your – I don't know who to ask this question of, but do you know of people who do this aside from that one person I mentioned? Does anybody know?
Yeah, I work in a sustainable food group at Chapel Hill, Fair Local Organic Food. It's a student group, and I had some friends who would go to Weaver Street Market in Chapel Hill and look for bread after hours.
In the dumpster?
Yeah.
It sounds vaguely disgusting. Is it safe?
I didn't join them. Okay. I've heard it's safe. There's a documentary on Netflix about it, which is probably where this trend
That's
started.
Probably started there. And you're a food studies major.
Yes.
What are food studies?
Food studies is a major that a few of the friends before me in my Flow food student group did. And essentially, you can pick a topic to intersect with food studies. So I got involved with sustainable food at UNC, and when I saw that you can really impact change in that system through business, I decided to declare a food studies major next to my economics major, where I can look at the intersection of sustainable food and business.
Wow. According to the National Resources Defense Council, the average American throws away over 33 pounds or $40 worth of food each month. Would any of you agree or disagree with those figures?
from what we've seen in the garbage, I'm sure that's completely correct. Going back to the dumpster diving, it's sad that we don't have more of a system set up to actually collect that food before it gets into the dumpster. I wouldn't recommend jumping into a dumpster because that's unsafe. But it is sad that so much of short date and probably, you know, food that isn't even expired yet ends up there. And the reason a lot of those students can eat that is because it's still completely packaged, but I would not recommend getting into a dumpster.
I can't think of any – maybe we do this in a lot of different arenas. I don't know. But it seems to me that most of us would not go to an ATM machine once a month, withdraw $40, and throw it in the trash can. But that's what we're doing, isn't it?
Yes.
Why do we do it? Why do we not see this as not only egregious waste, but really stupidly expensive?
Well, that's a great question, Mike, and one that just makes no sense when you think about it from that perspective. But we don't tend to see or notice our waste. It just kind of goes away. And so when we're not confronted with that food waste or wasted money, however you want to look at it, we don't really realize how much we're squandering through the food we toss. And part of what I'm hoping to do is raise awareness on this issue and get people to see that not only are they wasting their money, but they're impacting the environment and also throwing away stuff that could be feeding others.
When we throw things away, when we throw food away, usually it's a single item, maybe a rotten tomato that's gone bad on the countertop, or food scraps that could have been saved and recombined as leftovers, or whatever it may be. But we don't, as you say, we don't put it in a pile and watch it grow. We throw it down the garbage disposal, it disappears. We put it in the trash can, it disappears. Is that an argument for what you are an advocate of, Kathy? And that is composting.
Yes.
We would see.
You would see how much you are not using. By saving it on your countertop, taking it to your compost, you see how much scraps you had, how much you're throwing away, how much food has gone bad in your refrigerator. You can see it. By taking it, all of it, all your resources to the, whether it's your recyclables that you send to the recycling center, every time you take to the garbage, it just disappears, and people have no concept of how much resources they're wasting, including food.
So if people start to compost and they see the evidence of waste, does that lead to less waste and therefore less compost? Or do you?
I don't think we're going to worry about having less compost because when you prepare food, you're going to have foods, you're going to have scraps. So you're going to be feeding it, you're going to be feeding your compost. There's not going to be a shortage of food of compost. But we will be utilizing what we have more effectively. We'll be using the resources we have to their highest extent. We're still going to end up with stuff in the compost, but we're going to have used it first and then have it end up in the compost. One of the examples we have on our campus is that our largest dining service, our largest dining area, the Crown Commons, they do a lot of food prep beforehand. They actually have a system called Trim Track. So they measure how much they're getting, throwing in, they compost everything. Everything that goes into the compost, they actually measure before they put it into the compost to make sure they couldn't get another slice of tomato, another slice of onion out of it. It's called Trim Tracks. And then everything goes, all the scraps and all the dining area is all set up to have just in a minute, if salad bar, there's just enough lettuce and tomatoes out for the public to take, to put on their salad. The rest of it is kept behind in a large refrigerator so that if they never use it that day, it can be used the next day or donated. So they just, and then what is left, off the plates and off this dining area then goes into the composter, our food pulper, which then that is then sent to be composted.
Okay.
So we have a full system, but we dress it up front, reducing the waste, trayless area, and then the materials go to compost.
Glenn, you say that we Americans waste food because we are oversupplied with cheap food. There are probably some people out there who go to the grocery store who would take issue with that.
Yeah, maybe. And my father is probably one of them, actually. So, but what I've just noticed is that when my family goes to Costco to buy food in bulk and supposedly save money, we usually end up wasting a lot more of that food than when we go to Whole Foods and buy lesser but more high-quality food.
Yes, I read that in your comments, and that really kind of surprised me because Whole Foods has been also named Whole Paycheck by some people. So when you go to Costco, are you talking about when you go to Costco and you buy produce?
Yeah, produce is
because you have to buy enormous amounts of produce at Costco.
Produce is one of the most wasted foods in America, and that is definitely the one that usually ends up forgotten at the bottom of our fridge.
Is it wasted because we buy too much or because we don't eat enough of it? We just forget that we forget that it's there.
I think both, right? So how it's packaged, there's probably too much of it. And then we don't eat enough of it. We don't necessarily know how to prepare it. So I worked at Coon Rock Farm last summer, and my family bought into the CSA program that they have where you get a box of produce every week. And we didn't know how to cook a lot of these vegetables that are native to North Carolina. It's pretty crazy how we only see about 4 or 5 common vegetables in the grocery store because there's so much more variety out there.
People don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, I definitely didn't.
In your book, American Wasteland, Jonathan, you write, by throwing cheap, unhealthy offerings at our kids, we devalue food. And once again, I can see how that might devalue food for people who don't have to pay for it, but for the people who are paying for the food and sticking it in the refrigerator and on the dinner table, ultimately, why? I mean, parents do have to pay for things. So are you saying that throwing a kid a Twinkie seems like nothing because it's cheap?
Yeah, I mean, and just to get back to Glenn's point, I mean, food is inexpensive in this country when you look at the percentage of our household budget that we devote toward food. So it's less than 10%, and no other nation spends as little as we do on our food. And at the same time, it has rarely been lower than it is now, the percentage of our household spending, that is, that goes toward food. So that has an impact, and we don't tend to value things we don't spend much on. So when we take a step back and think about how we're approaching food, given that cheapness and given how disconnected we are from where our food comes from, with the majority of people just thinking that food items are born in the shrink-wrap styrofoam package, not having been to a farm or not having even seen a farm or perhaps lived on one as the majority of Americans did so long ago, it's just not terribly surprising that we don't tend to value that food.
Let me ask a stupid and insensitive question. If food is plentiful in America, and it's cheap in America, and it's never been cheaper than it is right now in America, what difference does all this make?
Well, that's the big question there. Why does it matter? And I've had that question asked a few times, and I think it's difficult for us to conceptualize just how much goes into that food, the natural resources that go into producing that food. And there are subsidies that come from our federal government that go toward making our food inexpensive, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have an impact on our environment when you look at the amount of oil and water that go into producing that food. And so that's all stuff that is being used unnecessarily, given that we're producing about 2 times the amount of food that we need.
So could it be argued that the rising price of fuel, gasoline, for instance, could could be offset by less food waste? If we wasted less food, the price of gasoline might go down? Because we'd be using less, the demand would be less?
If we were to then grow less food, which I'm a little skeptical about, but we could do that. Or more to the point, with a rising population, instead of growing 70% more by 2050, maybe we could just keep things a little bit stagnant or raise production a tiny bit, but not by 70%.
Kathy?
The more we have all this food, but some of it really isn't food. I mean, all of that packaging that we have, all that artificial food that is subsidized and readily available in the grocery store, that isn't really food and isn't helping our health.
I'm going to come back to that in a second because I want to know what really isn't food that I'm consuming here. We'll come back to that and more about food waste in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Lenore Ryan University graduate programs offering master's degrees in a variety of disciplines from the Hickory, Asheville, and Columbia, South Carolina campuses. Details at lr.edu/ graduate. It's been a hot summer politically in North Carolina. There have been 11 Moral Monday protests at the Statehouse in Raleigh with hundreds of arrests, and that is getting national attention. NPR has covered this. CBS News has covered this. The New York Times has covered this, among others. And we're obviously witnessing a sea change in Raleigh, and pundits and political science are raring at the bit to talk about it. They will join us tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a proposal in Congress to create a new system for prosecuting military sexual assault crimes is gaining ground. Efforts to remove the chain of command from sexual assault cases.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about food waste in America, which is egregious, with Jonathan Bloom, a food waste expert and author of American Wasteland. Glenn Lippig is an economics and food studies major and a food blogger for Motley Fool. He goes to UNC Chapel Hill. And Kathy Boutin-Paters is a recycling coordinator with UNC Charlotte. We'll talk more about the UNC Systems program to deal with food waste as we go through the hour here. But I want to get back to something you were talking about, Kathy, just prior to the break, and that is all the stuff that we buy at the grocery store that isn't food. How does that contribute to food waste?
Well,
what isn't food, by the way?
Just in the big picture, I mean, when you're thinking about eating healthy, it should be fresh vegetables, mm-hmm. fruit, mm-hmm. Locally grown, everything locally grown and seasonal, locally, grains, whole grains. And that isn't generally what people buy. Now, if you do belong to a CSA, you generally get those things. And then we find ourselves in the dilemma of not knowing what to do with this because we don't even know how to cook it.
What's a CSA?
It's a community-supported agriculture. People in Portland really love it. It's where you get a box of produce from your farmer every week throughout the growing season.
And we have those in the Charlotte area, and I belong to one. And it's interesting, after moving here from Michigan, to find what is local. It was a great introduction to what is local in North Carolina and what is seasonal here. So that was an incredible introduction to what is fresh and local and seasonal here by belonging to one. Now, most of the food that when you're going to the grocery store, you're finding it highly processed, packaged, and you're paying a lot more for not much. And then you end up wasting it.
We've talked about this highly processed on previous shows, but for those who weren't listening on those shows, what does that mean when a food is highly processed? What does that mean? Is that prepared foods that are in the frozen food section, or the prepared foods that you'd buy in the deli, or the prepared foods that you go to Trader Joe's and they've got the chicken marsala sitting out there, they're ready to put in the microwave? Is that
processed?
Well,
I was thinking more of the highly processed, like the white flour, the white rice, all the sugar, all of that that's been taken from the farm, mm-hmm. processed heavily, all the bran's been taken off the wheat, all that energy that has gone into grow it and move it and process it and then turn it into this super white fine flour that ends up being made into yet something else that then you buy. So all that energy that has gone into buy something that has been stripped of a lot of nutrients, and then nutrients are then added back in so that you can have it.
I see. So in modern agriculture and in modern food production, which has to be done on an enormous mm-hmm. scale to feed the people that we have to feed in this country and around the world, can you go back to the old way of doing it and not strip all the stuff out of it and not then re-add it into the final mix down the manufacturing line? Can you do it?
Well, I think people are doing it now by shopping at their local farmer markets, and they're getting a box of food from their local farmer. With a CSA, you buy into it. You mm-hmm. pay ahead of time, and then you all collectively get the produce off that farm. A lot more people are doing that. The slow food movement has brought that forth. Also, people are learning how to cook again. By having everything so processed and everything so available to you, people have forgotten how to cook. So the very simple thing of just taking some simple ingredients mm-hmm. and making dinner, which can take as little time as using it processed, which goes back to how much was wasted to begin with, how much food was wasted on the front end just getting it to the market. Then it goes to the market and how much they throw out because people want to buy it all perfectly shaped.
Mm-hmm. Which gets us to a whole other category, and those heirloom mm-hmm. vegetables that people won't buy because they don't look like what
they don't
they
look
think
like the red yeah. the red tomato that we don't realize a tomato can also be purple.
Hmm. Jonathan, you say that we are perplexed by use by and sell by dates. In fact, you say we fear the sell by date. What does that mean, and what's the result of all that?
Yeah, well, the result is a whole lot of trash being created from perfectly edible food. But essentially we have this fear that on midnight, on the day that is stamped on a package of food, that food item instantaneously goes bad. And that is not exactly the case. The food labels that we see on packages today, they speak to food quality, not food safety. So they are telling us when something's going to be at its peak freshness.
Mm-hmm.
And they aren't even required by federal law. The only thing required by the FDA to have a date label on it is infant formula. So with all those labels you see on everything from milk to loaves of bread to my favorite bottles of water, all those are voluntarily put on by the manufacturer because they want you to eat or drink their product at its best. And so if we're just paying attention to that, if we are blindly following those date labels, then you're going to be throwing away a whole lot of good food.
I suppose that it depends on the food that we're talking about because I never thought about a bottle of water having an expiration date on it.
Yeah.
But I guess if you look at the expiration date on a bottle of water and it was 3 years ago, could you be hurt by opening it and drinking it? Or is it completely safe? It just might not taste
yeah.
right.
I mean you'd be fine. It might not taste as you
but what
want
about,
it to. I would
well,
guess
what about,
it probably would.
What about bread or milk or some of the other things, even cans of food that have been hermetically
sealed
sure. have sell-by dates on
yeah.
them?
So the thing about dates is that things could go bad before that date. It's just not the be-all, end-all. We shouldn't treat that date as the gospel truth. We should look at it as a guideline. And
okay.
so using your senses of sight, taste, and smell— we should be able to know when things are off or not.
Jenny, email. Go ahead. Sorry,
I was just going to say that people aren't sure if they'll be able to tell. People don't seem to trust their senses these days, and that's why they put this blind faith on the package label. But if you're not sure if you've ever smelled bad milk, that means you haven't.
Absolutely.
Jenny emails, I am stunned each week, at least two times a week, when I see produce workers at my local grocery store throwing perfectly good produce into the dumpsters, not even composted. I've asked management about this, and they say that it is a company-wide mandate. This has got to add up to hundreds of thousands of pounds of perfectly good fruits and vegetables wasted. Aren't grocers required to remove food after a certain sell date has expired? Aren't they required to get rid of it?
Perhaps. That's a real shame, though, on that industrial level, because at UNC in our dining halls, the company who runs them, Carolina Dining Services, takes all the waste, all the food that's wasted, and sends it to an industrial composting site that's in North Carolina. So it can definitely be done on a larger scale.
But how is that reduced? That's the other question I was going to get to later in the program. Compost seems to me to be the avenue of last resort or the avenue where you take what you really can't use,
exactly.
like the top of the tomato
mm-hmm.
that has
right.
the stem on
yeah.
it, and you compost that. Composting should not be viewed as a way to reduce waste because it's waste.
Certainly not. They've also taken preventative measures like trayless dining. So apparently when you don't give students a tray, they fill up their plate with less food,
mm-hmm.
and when they finish that, they have to come back more often.
Let's talk about that, because you brought that up
right.
first,
they,
Kathy. This trayless dining, it seems like an inconvenience. Is that the point?
Because no,
if you have to, I mean, if you can only carry
it
so
is,
much in your hand,
it's eating with your not eating with your eyes.
Yes,
you come into the cafeteria, you're very hungry, you take a tray, and you end up putting six plates on it when one plate was enough.
Right.
So you can stay in the cafeteria and eat as long as you want, but do it one plate at a time, and you'll find that you eat healthier. you eat what you need and what you want, and you don't end up with your, what is it now, the 15 pounds that you gain as a freshman because you have this available. But if you have a tray, you have even more. But you just waste more all the way around. Your waste grows and you waste food.
Right.
So it's not inconvenient because you got to get up. You realize you don't need that much food. The students don't expect to see a tray when they go in. They expect just to take a plate and sit down with it. So it's, if they thought it, at one time, if they thought it was an inconvenient, they no longer think that way because this is just the way it is now.
So if you want to go back to that third helping, you have to actually get up and walk across the room.
Yes, which maybe you realize you don't need that third helping.
Traylessness, it's a fabulous idea because not only are you're just removing something, so it doesn't cost any money, but you're kind of playing on our natural laziness, like you were saying, Mike, of, I don't want to have to get up and go get more food. So as a result, you don't eat as much as – you don't eat too much and you don't waste as much.
Well, and our eyes are bigger.
I wanted to just go back for a second. You raised a really fabulous point about composting being kind of the last resort.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want it to get lost in the shuffle. The caller asked about the supermarket dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a really important step there where we could be channeling a lot of that food that's edible but unsellable to those nonprofits out there, like DC Central Kitchen, and I'm sure that each major city has their own operation. But there's a federal shield law. There's the Good Samaritan Act that protects donors from liability if they give food that they deem to be in good shape. So a lot of people don't know about that, or maybe some companies are a little bit leery that it might cover them.
Let's back up for a second. So if you as a commercial enterprise donate the food to a homeless shelter or a food kitchen or a food pantry that you would otherwise throw into the dumpster, you cannot be held liable if you give that food pantry something that if you eat it makes you sick?
Well, you have to – if the key point there is that you have to deem that food to be in good shape. So if you're going to throw it out, then you shouldn't be donating it. But if it's something that's perfectly good but the package label just has this date of today on it, for example, that's for the most part going to be stuff you can use.
Well, again, it's I suppose up to the discretion of people who understand food and dates and labels on the dates on the labels. But – we've done a lot of shows on food, and everybody says to us that produce, for instance, the farther it travels, the less nutritious it is. The longer it takes to get from the farm to the plate, the less nutritious it is. So if something has sat, if a package of celery has, or a package of I don't know, wrapped. I don't know why they do this, but they take corns of cob, corn cobs, and they wrap them in plastic. If that's sat in the grocery store shelf for a week and it's gotten to its expiration date where they feel that they can't sell it anymore, is it worth eating? Is there anything left, nutritionally speaking, in it?
Well, I would say it's better than the majority of the processed foods that we get out there. But more to the point, the foods that are being thrown out that could be donated are those superficial culls, so things that have a tiny blemish in them, mostly fresh produce, healthy foods that might be the wrong shape, size, or color. And when you go into your produce department in the supermarket, you'll see an employee working on the display and culling anything that doesn't look just perfect. And those are food items that you and I would take home and enjoy that day and that nonprofits could make fresh meals from, but in many places are being thrown away.
Well, let's talk about that. Maybe this is a question for you, Glenn. I'm not sure. As you go through the produce department and you see things that have blemishes, you see tomatoes that have soft spots on them, I pass over them. Should I not?
I think that's up to you. It's about what fits your budget and what not. You know, those things should definitely
be marked. Well, they're not going to charge me any less for a tomato with a blemish on it.
Yeah, they should be marked down. Maybe there should be a price differentiation in produce because there's definitely a market of people who would buy those for a lower price.
So does most food waste occur in institutional settings like grocery stores or college cafeterias, or does it occur at home? Where does the, you know, where
well, you get a concentration, obviously, in an institutional area because you've got all that food already at the grocery store or on a campus. Our one cafeteria will have 300 pounds of compost after serving thousands of students in a day. But that is now going to be made back into soil, which will then you grow more food. And that's after all the reduction measures have been taken. And also food there is food that is donated from the campus to Second Harvest and other places in the Charlotte area.
But according to the North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources in a 2012 food waste generation study, stores in North Carolina throw away 106 tons of food every year. So if waste is occurring in the home, is it more than 106 tons of waste throughout North Carolina in homes? It must be.
Yeah, it is. The two largest generators of waste are farms and homes. Just from a household perspective, the sheer number of homes out there outweighs the aggregation of waste that you see in institutional settings.
What waste is occurring on the farm?
Well, on the farm, there's a good amount of food that isn't harvested. That for
Why?
Economic reasons, the cost of an item might not justify its harvest. Whether it's the diesel used to harvest it, if it's mechanized harvest, or the labor if it's hand-picked crops.
So if
but,
the, so
that's
if the,
better
well,
than
why grow it?
In
the, why grow it in the first place? I mean, explain that to me. Is it the price at the market at that point in the product's life that makes it unusable or unharvestable or unworthy of harvest?
Well, growers know that the price of a crop will vary greatly, so they don't know that when they're planting their crops.
Okay.
But then they also want to make sure that they have enough. So if something goes wrong with a certain field, then they're kind of insured against the total loss.
Since it is true that particularly fruits and vegetables lose their nutritional value the longer they have been away from the tree or the stalk or the farm, should we, in an effort to reduce waste, should we not only not buy them in bulk, as your parents may be doing at Costco, but also adjust our food habits, our food buying habits? So people like to take one trip or two trips to the grocery store a week. In Europe, they make many, many, many trips to their area markets, like daily, and just buy what they need that day. Would there be less waste if we approached it that way?
Probably. And also, you remember, you're walking. In Europe, you're very close to your fresh food.
Mm-hmm.
Here, people are taking – they're farther away, for most part, from their grocery store, so they have to do it. They have to dish up all in one time. And there's nothing wrong with buying a large amount of food if you plan to use it all, or say prepare it, you know, can it, freeze it, you know, make meals ahead of time. There's nothing wrong with buying in bulk when seasonal things are coming and you're getting a lot of blueberries. You know, make jam, put in the freezer for later. There's nothing wrong with buying in bulk for planning for it for later.
But if we've forgotten
you still have to, yes, we have forgotten.
If we've forgotten how to cook, we've certainly forgotten how to make jams and jellies and canned things, and probably don't have the time or the inclination to do so, do we?
Well, actually, a lot of people are starting to do that again. They're, like I said, there's an organization called Slow Food, and there's one here in Charlotte, where people are actually gathering and doing potlucks and meeting together because, you know, you can't do everything off the internet. You actually still want to be with people, and there's nothing better than sharing and cooking dinner together. And you actually find that by cooking from scratch, you are actually saving the same amount of time and more money by doing it at home.
You mean you can't cook together on Facebook? Who knew? All right, we have to take a break. We'll come back with more of this in just a moment with Jonathan Bloom, Glenn Lippig, and Kathy Boutin-Pasters. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Goddard School, hosting an ice cream social open house at Charlotte area locations. Thursday, July 25th, 4 to 6 p.m., goddardschool.com/Charlotte. a proposal in Congress to create a new system for prosecuting military sexual assault crimes is gaining ground. Efforts to remove the chain of command from sexual assault cases, the topic of the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock in about 20 minutes from right now. We're talking about food waste, and perhaps you have something to add to the conversation. And if you'd like to do so, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is a great place to start. We're coming right back.
Brian Genest of Cole Genest & Stone talks about underwriting on WFAE.
Like so many businesses, we've had to make cuts in our marketing budget, and the one place that we did not cut at all was WFAE, because I hear all the time from folks, clients and friends, they hear our messages all the time on the radio, and we recognize how important that is.
For more information, email underwriting@WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Glenn Lippig is an economics and food studies major. He joins us in our studio. He's also the food blogger for The Motley Fool. Jonathan Bloom is author of American Wasteland. He's sitting in a studio in Durham at WUNC. And Kathy Boutin, Pastors, is recycling coordinator with UNC Charlotte. Can you quantify the impact that you have had on food waste reduction by eliminating the use of trays at UNC? And it's not just Charlotte, it's Chapel Hill as well, I believe.
I don't think we have an actual study on that, okay. But I mean, it saves in the amount of trips that the students take back to the, you know, that they don't go back a second or third time. It saves on the water from not washing the tray. There's an enormous savings all the way around.
Okay.
By going trailers.
I could add in, just nationally, the average is about 25 to 30% less food wasted.
Wow.
Through traylessness.
When Americans cooked most of their meals, particularly from scratch, and had leftovers, they probably consumed those leftovers or found clever ways to recombine those leftovers into something altogether different so it didn't seem like a leftover. Now that we're buying a lot of prepackaged and processed foods, do we do that as much? Is that part of the problem here? We don't know what to do with what's left because we don't know how to cook.
I think it's like what Jonathan said earlier, is that we've completely disconnected ourselves from how food grows. Without knowing what is grown seasonally, where how much it even takes to grow, we don't – and that from disconnecting ourselves from the farm, we've disconnected ourselves actually from our kitchen also. Even with all the cooking shows on TV, we're completely disconnected from that. And, you know, it just needs to take that shift back. It's not saving us time by growing all the way to the grocery store, spending more money, working to get more money to buy the processed food to come back and do it. Come home, start, you know, sit with people, cook from scratch, put together a simple meal of seasonally grown food. That's what our shift needs to be. And you can see it happening already. A lot more farmers markets are happening. People are showing up there first thing in the morning. People are learning how to can. Where I live up in the Concord area, there's classes again on canning that was a dying art.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, I want to get back to the phenomenon that you talked about, that your parents indulge in. I indulge in it. Maybe you do too. I don't know. Going to buy bulk at places like Costco because it's cheaper and you get an abundant amount of food and you don't have to go back quite so often. But a lot of it, as you say, particularly if it's fresh produce, unless you have a large family or intend to use it for some kind of a gathering, it's going to go to waste. And you suggest that you would be better off and spend less amount of money by buying smaller amounts of food at a place like Whole Foods, and you say it tastes better. Really?
Yeah.
Does it really taste better? I've had some things at Costco that are pretty darn tasty.
I know. Their brownies are to die for. But you did mention earlier, and I'm not claiming absolutely that it will cost less, but you mentioned earlier that Whole Foods has this nickname, Whole Paycheck. Well, I have to stand up for them because they've done a really big push in the last quarter of lowering their prices so they can attract more people. I think you're going to see them becoming more mainstream. But I also think that this food definitely tastes better. So I've been researching pecans this summer, and you probably never had a fresh pecan because what's sold in the stores is 2 years old, dried out, and terrible. but when they're fresh and you have to eat them within like a couple weeks of harvest in the fall, amazing. I've heard that fresh asparagus is a near religious experience. They used to think it was an aphrodisiac, but none of us would ever know because we just buy that crumply stuff in Kroger.
Let's leave the brand names out of it. That's all right.
Well, if you've ever had fresh corn right from the farm, you practically want to just peel it and eat it right then. You almost don't even need to cook
it. It's like going to those peach stands in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. You have not had a peach until it runs down your cheek. It's so juicy, and you cannot find a good peach in a store. You just can't. Are we the biggest sinner in the world in terms of nations, in terms of food waste, because it's so abundant and it's so cheap here? Or are we a part of a family of Western nations that's engaging in this kind of behavior?
Western nations definitely waste more. I'd say we're the biggest sinner, but we have also pioneered a lot of this technology that's allowed food to go forward so much in terms of producing more, and we shouldn't be ashamed of that because that's taken us a long way. All these innovations in production and technology are a really great base that we have now to build upon and improve.
And you have pointed out to our producers that in this country, at least, most food is wasted after it is purchased, whereas in other countries, less developed countries, it's wasted before it gets to the home because they don't have adequate transportation.
Yeah, and that's a shame. So things like refrigeration, bumpy roads, they can't even get the food to where it needs to be. We have almost an easier problem in the sense that we just have to change consumer habits. So we have the infrastructure. Now it's just about our mindset.
A couple of things that have come in while we've been talking. Bill and Matthew's emails, as old people trying to save as much as possible for the limited time we have left. My wife and I began doing a few things a long time ago, which we strongly recommend to your listeners. When you go out to restaurants, bring any leftovers home in a doggy bag. My wife has a wonderful knack for repurposing those scraps into meals that are far better than what the restaurant served us originally. Also, refrigerator soup, which is nothing more than taking whatever leftovers are in the refrigerator and making soup from them. Finally, we compost all of our scraps that can't be eaten and compost them for later use in our gardens. I know that I think it's you, Jonathan, that writes about these egregious portions that have been taking over restaurant plates. We expect to go out and be feasted on when we go to a restaurant. Who doesn't take leftovers home? I mean, if you can't eat it all, do people really leave it behind at a restaurant?
Oh, you'd be amazed at the number of people who don't take food home from restaurants. And I don't quite understand it. As a leftover lover, it doesn't make any sense personally. But there's definitely some factors at play, and it's in some places seen as a bit gauche or uncouth to take food home. And I'm trying to get to the bottom of those attitudes and figure out why we would leave this food that we've already paid for, leave it on the table, and knowing that it's just going to be thrown out.
So is there a lot of waste in restaurants?
Oh, yeah. Anyone who's worked in a restaurant who's bussed tables or waited tables will attest to the sheer volume of food tossed away. And that plate waste is not stuff that you can reuse. At best, it's being composted.
Has anybody in the restaurant industry done any kind of study to see perhaps if there's a great deal of waste, food being left behind, might it be cheaper for them to serve less in the first place?
Well, restaurants are more concerned with their kitchen waste because the plate waste is stuff that customers have already paid for. Mm-hmm. So what I've seen is restaurants aren't really all that attuned to that waste because it's not hurting their bottom line. I think there's going to be a counter movement to the massive portions that we see today. But I keep waiting for it to happen, but things seem to be going in the other direction.
Princess on Facebook writes, this is an ethical issue. People tend to believe that the problem is overpopulation, which is a convenient way to ignore how we use our abundant resources. Even if I'm dieting, I'd rather eat the food or give it away than trash it. You also say that we should investigate, Glenn, we should investigate incorporating a wider variety of meats into our diet. I think you already spoke about vegetables. But we're only And this gets kind of gross, I guess, but you said that we only eat a certain portion of the animals. That, first of all, we don't eat a lot of different meats. We only have chicken, beef, pork.
Yeah, and North Carolina is the second biggest hog-producing state.
And that's pretty much it. Our ancestors ate a wider variety of animals.
Yeah.
But you say that of the animals we eat, we don't eat much of the animal.
Yeah, so of all the food to waste, meat is really kind of the biggest crime, right? Because so much energy goes into making that meat. And so what we eat are the nice cuts, but there's like all the livers, the hearts, the offals, as they're called, which is a terrible name because it sounds like awful. But it's all that stuff that falls off when the butcher cuts the nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be bad. These organ kind of dishes are really big in France, Italy, China, but we just... And actually, during World War II, when the American government was sending a lot of our meat abroad, we had to increase consumption of offals at home because we wanted people to get protein still.
Is that where Spam came from?
It might be. So there's this great marketing campaign where they realized that you have to incorporate it into dishes that people are familiar with. So they would have like liver meatloaf. It has to look familiar to people. So that's also just... a cultural shift that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it can be quite tasty.
So what are you talking about? What pieces of the animal are we leaving behind that we could consume and probably ought to consider consuming?
So one big southern delicacy is pork brains. Sounds yummy, right? But they have a lot of great B12 and good cholesterol. And, you know, maybe tongue tacos could be the answer to food waste. Who knows?
Have you eaten these things?
I have not, but at Coon Rock Farm, what I was really impressed with is that we processed and sold a lot more parts of the animals than you would normally find at a grocery store, and people love them. So one day, I found myself clipping the toenails off chicken feet so we could sell the chicken feet.
Jonathan, I want you to chime in on this.
Glenn, we're going to have to go find a taco place around here. We'll have some,
sounds good,
some tongue and cabeza and all that.
Well, people
stuff.
Do eat tongue, and yet, it's a very small minority of people who eat tongue, it seems to me. And I think you, in one of the things I read that you wrote, Glenn, you talk about not only livers and kidneys, but hearts.
Who knows? I had some chicken hearts at a Brazilian steakhouse a few weeks ago. Tasted kind of like iron, but I could get used to it.
Mm. Talk to me about that, Jonathan. Has anybody brought this up before that we don't eat enough of the animals that we produce for food? That's considered
it's definitely,
waste.
It's definitely a theme. The whole animal from tail to snout, that kind of idea. I mean, it's not a new thing, but that notion. But we've certainly gotten away from using the entire animal, or even on a plant level, you have the kind of root to leaves or root to flowers approach, and just being more cognizant of how much of a product we can use. And I think the stakes are higher with animals, from not only the energy standpoint, but from an ethical one. If we're going to justify killing living things to consume them, the least we could do is actually use all of that animal.
Probably the closest we get to this is hot dogs and sausage, and hot dogs get a bad name for including things, mystery meat, in the hot dog itself.
Yeah.
Would the American public take to this? Are we open to? I mean, I remember having liver for dinner when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
I don't see a lot of liver in the grocery store. I know that it's there, but you don't see it to the extent that you see chicken parts.
Yeah, it would have to be.
We've gotten a bit spoiled, frankly, and so we just want chicken breasts. We don't even want dark meat. There's a study that showed all of the leg and thigh meat from chicken that's being sent elsewhere because Americans just have this insatiable appetite for white meat for some reason. And so I think using more of an animal would certainly be helpful, and we could do
a whole lot.
Well,
we don't even use the whole chicken anymore. I mean, you know, it's so much easier just to buy the whole chicken, cook the whole thing, and then make it into several meals. And here people are buying the skinned breast. That's it. You know,
my grandmother used to go to her house for Sunday dinner, and she would cook a baked chicken, and she would cook the whole chicken, and then she'd be the only person who would eat the gizzards. I don't even know what gizzards are, but you don't see those in the store very much either. Blake couldn't hold, but he said that he has two kids and used to waste food all the time, but the recession, forced her, rather, to stop wasting food. And Jessica says one of the best things her grandmother taught her was how to keep a garden and canning the bounty. Let me take a call here from Lawrence in Charlotte. Welcome to the program, Lawrence.
Hey, Mike, thanks a lot. Listen, I have a lot to say, but there's not much time, so I'll just kind of make it quick. First of all, as being a master composter, I would say that food would be waste unless it were composted, okay, because it goes into the landfills otherwise. Mm-hmm. But I called early on because I wanted to point out that the actually it's not just the food, I mean, it's not just the oil and the water that's used in the production of food that is a big problem, especially on these industrialized farms and factory farms that produce meat. The cows produce methane, which is one of the major reasons we have global warming now, affecting the atmosphere. The soil and nutrient runoff goes into our streams and oceans. The deforestation is actually contributing to global warming and ruining the ecology of the rainforest. The food from other places is shipped, thousands of miles to get to us. And also the industrial fishing, has been raping the bottoms of the ocean. So these are, other things that somebody should consider when actually going out and shopping and such before one, puts the fork of food into one's mouth.
Okay. As you say, we're short on time, Lawrence, but thank you.
So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you for your call, and thank you for holding on. Getting back to the numbers before we leave here, we live in this land of abundance, and the question is, will it always be so? And if the world really is going to need, I think it was 70% more food by 2050, won't we be forced either to reduce our consumption, increase our production if that's possible, or reduce our waste, or all three?
Well, definitely we have a lot.
You would certainly think so.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're wasting so much, we could probably fill a lot of people with the food we're wasting.
Wow. All right. Kathy Boutin-Pasteur's recycling